This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
So, welcome, listener, to Season 2, Episode 38 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock Paper Shotgun's PC gaming podcast. I'm James Archer, and possibly because I tempted fate in Episode 37 by suggesting otherwise, we are still down one Alice Bell. But we do have one Nate Crowley. Hello, Nate.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, that was... That was lovely.
That was the fanfare that the castle in Age of Empires 2 makes when it builds, just to continue the slow-running sort of all-season hype train for my improvised Age of Empires 2 tower role-playing game.
Lovely. I mean, that was a just excellent mouth trumpet. That could have been like the real thing, maybe.
That's very powerful. Thank you. What's your best simulated instrument?
Good question. I might be able to do a halfway decent kazoo, if we count that as a musical instrument.
Yeah, and I respect you enough to know you'd give it a decent go, because a lot of people think
How's that?
It's horrible. It's perfect.
It's just like a real kazoo.
Yeah, because kazoos have got a uniquely demonic sound. I like them. Do you remember Vuvuzelas?
Oh, yeah. What was that, like 2008 or something?
Yeah, well... Correct me if I'm wrong, they were just pipes that people whirled around their heads, yeah, right?
They're like plastic horns, kind of, but like really long, long, thin plastic horns.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was almost like a sort of medieval trumpet, wasn't it?
They just basically had one note, which was the sound of like a swarm of bees.
Honestly, what with like District 9 immediately being followed up by the 1-2 punch of Vuvuzelas, like, that really was South Africa's moment in the sun.
Yeah.
It was a...
And
was it 2009? 2010?
It was a World Cup, so it would have been an even-numbered year. I think it might be 2008. I think, maybe.
Listeners, write in and let us know what order time occurred in. I know District 9 was 2009. There you go.
Yeah, I do have a bollocks. I've forgotten the word immediately.
I'm praying you're going to say Vuvuzela.
On my desk.
Now hang on, was that a real kazoo or was it your face?
Kazoo. Yes, thank you. This is my actual kazoo, which I keep on my desk at all times for some reason.
What do you use it for anything in your day to day?
Not really, to be honest. I was a bit nervous about putting it in my mouth because it's gained a bit of dust since I last used it.
The dusty kazoo.
So I might now be... My lungs might be filled with kazoo dust.
I hate that for you.
But yeah, so Alice isn't ill again. She's just on holiday. So good for her, honestly. I kind of wish I was on holiday.
Where would you go?
No.
If you could... just shout and leap into the sky.
Oh, just somewhere sunny, where it isn't traditional November. I don't like November. It's probably my least favourite month.
Of course, the total the devil thing to do to you there would be to put you in Antarctica, where it would now be sunny almost all day.
It wouldn't rain, though.
No.
I can kind of... I can't handle snow, but I... I get snow. Snow is kind of like doing its own thing, and it's, you know, I respect that. Rain is just, it just ruins your day, you know?
It can't stick like to its own knitting, can it?
Yeah, no. Like, it doesn't, you're going to be heavy rain, you're going to be light rain, you're going to be drizzle, like, just pick a weather.
Nah, snow is, mind you get, the snow in Antarctica's like, just like really angry dust because it's so dry, isn't it? So,
oh, is it? I don't know.
Yeah, there was that famous shot. I think it was late 90s. The Life in the Freezer documentary, and Attenborough found a seal carcass of a seal that died about 70 years ago, and it hadn't rained, so it was just there still, just because it hadn't decayed. Very, very odd. Yeah. Don't go to Antarctica. That's the recommendation for this week.
I can't think of a segue, to be honest. It's we're doing this in the afternoon, unusually, and I'm already at that kind of like late day.
Shall I pretend to be a sort of a frightened medieval monk asking what's going on with the sulphurous rent that's opened up on the hillside by the tin mines, and I think it's the devil? Don't worry,
we can do, but I'm not sure how that pertains to free-to-play games.
What yon has emerged from the chasm in the hill? Is it a devil?
A Remedy game is being remade? I'm really sorry if I'm like not latching on to a joke here.
No, it's okay. The monk's tanking this one. We can leave him behind.
Remedy Entertainment of Alan Wake, Control, and Max Payne fame were developing a free-to-play co-op shooter known internally as Project Vanguard. They have this week announced that Project Vanguard will be rebooted, still as a co-op multiplayer game, but as a traditional paid-for game rather than free-to-play, now called Project Kestrel. To investors said that, due to uncertainties in creating a successful game to the rapidly changing free-to-play market and associated risks, the parties have discussed a new direction for the game project. Taro Vitala, CEO of Remedy, also said in this note that, after a lot of careful consideration, we believe that taking on a new direction, where the game will be built more around Remedy's core competences, is the right way to go. So, this is partly, this whole rebooting thing is partly Remedy wanting to stay a bit more within their comfort zone of, quote, premium paid-for games, but also partly not wanting to go near the free-to-play market. So,
yeah.
With the caveat that we are not actually a pair of Big Mike Lunchtimes working in games publishing, do we think this is a smart call?
Is it exploratory? Do you know much about what other publishers are thinking on this front? Like, are they the first to sort of take a step back from it?
I don't know if they're the first. I guess this is like a relatively, public and large scale in terms of, you know, the size of Remedy's game projects. Example of what was intended as a free-to-play game, you know, doing an about face and becoming a like full paid for game. There are instances of premium games which then become free to play, often when they are not perhaps selling in the volume that the publisher would like. But this is like a relatively significant example of the other thing happening, but also not really because they are still making the game. Or have in fact, you know, restarted making the game.
Well, yeah, because free-to-play always used to be seen as a death knell. It was the recurring joke for World of Warcraft for the longest time, wasn't it? Which persisted, of course. That's weird going the other way. What is it you think they think is going to change that's going to make it less tenable? What do you think they're betting on?
I think it's just perceived as a risky thing to be like making a new free-to-play game, because if we're thinking about this from a pure business perspective, yes, there are games with, you know, money printing licenses, your Fortnites, your Robloxes, your Warzones, Apex Legends, arguably, But these are long established games with masses of backing behind them, huge marketing budgets and so on. So I think if I were a developer or a publisher, I'd be looking at that and thinking, well, is there any pie left for me to have a slice of? Like, it must be so difficult to break into a space where these behemoths are already taking up so much time and money.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to work out what the... Well, I mean, I realise there's a whole profession of incredibly well-paid people to do this, but, like, actually working out what that market is at any given time is a concept that stumps me as well. I imagine the economics of it are very complicated and shifting all the time, so... I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if other people follow the same change in the wind.
Yeah. I guess it's also you're kind of committing to a more live servicey model if you go free to play. You're basically saying, like, we will keep updating this and we'll keep developing new content for this, like, more or less indefinitely. I think if you just sell a game, even if it's a multiplayer game, then you have more flexibility to... Or maybe not. Maybe not flexibility isn't the right word, but, like, you can potentially drop it faster, and people won't be mad at you because they've already, you know, got their fill.
Well, no, I know what you mean, because it's like with press releases like that, you're always sort of trying to work out what the unspoken bad news is, and like, yeah, but the cynical side of me was like, okay, so they're trying to manage expectations for how much this one's going to get supported after launch, maybe.
The exact quote is, due to uncertainties in creating a successful game to the rapidly changing free-to-play market and associated risks. I will say I'm not entirely sure, as someone who is not really an industry insider, what the rapidly changing conditions are. Like, are people becoming less willing to part with their cash, maybe? Are people getting bored of, like, battle passes and the like?
That's the classic businessman thing of, like, saying something that could allude to, like, 9 completely different situations. and I hope you'll retrospectively be proved right. I assume he's talking about people having less disposable incomes, but then, like, games tend to be pretty counter-cyclical, at least they were during the Great Recession a few years back. I don't know. Well, I'm out of the business mafia now.
I don't know if it is that, because, well, it might be that, I'm not sure, but there was this, when free-to-play games were first getting big, like, there was this thing of, like, oh, well, people have less disposable income and it's easier for them to get into a free-to-play game and maybe, like, drop a couple of dollars on cosmetics than it is to buy a brand new, like, £60, £50 game.
Do you know, funnily enough, Hearthstone did the equivalent of standing outside my bedroom window with a fucking boombox the other night. It just gave me, like, 100 packs of cards to try and entice me back to playing the game.
Okay.
It might have been 80. It was some huge number that would have cost like 60 quid, but it clearly noticed I'd only been playing the auto battler mode for about 3 years and was like, I wonder if we can get him back into buying cards. If it's like a crack dealer going out to give someone a kilo of crack to remind them how much definitely... they like crack.
Do you still like crack?
No, it's awful.
Was that definitely something that they did specifically to, like, lapsed players? It wasn't just all players are getting 80 packs of cards because
I think promotion. It was because it was called, like, the Hero Returns or something, and I think it was...
Okay.
Yeah, it was... To be honest, it was one of the things where I just wanted my 20-minute fix, so I dismissed the notification... Lay your gifts of dead mice at my feet, cat. I care not. Keep your cards. I'll go and have a look. But I thought it was interesting that they would wager that much of an opportunity cost to get me back. Because I guess they're just like, well, if he's not coming back at this stage, he's not at all. And if he is, then that's cheap at 80 cards. Mm. So...
Can you like do anything with the cards? Can you like sell them? Is there a like a Steam-style market or anything?
That's a good point. I know it was being discussed at one point, but again, since I've just become like this weird auto-battler hillbilly sticking to my one like incredibly vile corner of the game, I don't know what's in the offing there. I suspect not.
That's a shame. So as a veteran Hearthstone hillbilly, Nate, does seeing a game being free to play affect your perception of it at all? Like, does it send a shiver down your spine? Like, ugh, that's going to be, I don't know, predatory, or it's going to demand too much of my time.
Which I remember deliberately picking up Hearthstone in 2015. That's depressing. Because I forget what was going on. It was right before I moved house, and I literally had time to kill for the first time in ages. So I was like, right, if I'm going to get something that's going to claw into me, now's the time to do it. And I did literally stigmatize it ahead of time and was correct. so I wonder how much I spent on it over the years. I've certainly not been a whale, but I would be surprised if I hadn't spent more than 500 since then. Like,
wow.
Which over the course of 8 years is forgivable, I think. They're quite nice pictures of pigs with axes or whatever.
Also true. Yeah, I guess that's like one game a year, roughly.
Yeah. You know, it all balances out.
That's fair enough.
What about yourself? Is there a taint? Is there a miasma?
Maybe a little bit. I don't normally have like an instant revulsion to free-to-play games. I have played about 1,500 hours of Apex Legends. About 1,000 hours of Team Fortress 2, although that's a bit of an unusual case these days. But then at the same time... Sorry, go on.
While you're doing that, I'm just going to... There will be a click, because I'm going to check to see how long I played Age of Empires 2, and I think you might have beaten me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that is counting the early 2000s.
So I'm not like allergic to free to play games, but at the same time, because I already play those, and I know how much time and effort you need to put into it to kind of get stuff back. Even if you bought a battle pass, like, you don't get, you're just buying the right to earn, you know, new items and cosmetics and what have you. You're not actually buying them directly.
It always felt to me that Ape Legs sort of had the reputation of being a sort of more honourable, or people have never seemed that annoyed by it compared to other games, but that might entirely be because I quite like it myself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of the relatively less intrusive free-to-play things. Like, you get pop-ups, I guess, when you log in to buy the battle pass or whatever.
How many different currencies does it have at the moment? Because that's always the tell, isn't it?
I think it has like one strictly premium currency and like a couple of different crafting currencies. But I remember the one you use to like unlock new, you know, legends or characters when they come out is one. You can get those with the freebie stuff. Those are the one thing that you don't have to buy. So yeah, it's like that's a relatively like light one. But even so, like knowing the investment you have to put into these kinds of games, do I have both the time and the inclination to give my time to yet another live service game? And for me personally, not really, like, or not ideally.
You were saying.
And again, that's not out of a revulsion for free-to-play mechanics. I've quite happily put money into Apex and TF2 and Dota 2, actually. Christ, I spent something like £16 on a dress in Dota once. Crystal Maiden Arcana, gorgeous.
924 hours on Age of Empires 2, by the way.
Okay.
Funnily enough, actually, just thinking about that.
That's good whack.
The last... I was going to say this in what we've been playing, but I've been playing the Mountain Royals DLC for that. which is all about getting raucous in the caucus. and it's, yeah, it's really good. I'm doing what I always do when a Age of Empires 2 DLC comes out, which is go in, play a few random games with the new civs, do the three campaigns, the single player ones, over the course of about a week and a half, and then sort of drift away from the game till the next DLC. But that's really interesting because they're cheap DLC as well. They get, you know, just absolutely without a thought, automatically I buy them on launch day for £7, and I know, yeah, I will get a... It's quite an unambitious way of doing it, but it's going like gangbusters.
Yeah, fair.
And that's a sort of a halfway house, I suppose, because that's, you know... Okay, they do have servers and things for competitive multiplayer play, but it's certainly not, you know, live service game. But yet, you know, it is almost getting the air of a seasonal thing now because of the regularity of the DLC.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know how common that is.
Well, it's such a weird outlier in so many ways, Age of Empires. It's interesting.
Yeah. I guess, unfortunately, you know, there are lots of examples of free-to-play games just shutting down, like perishing.
Yeah, there's been a lot withering.
Yeah, like just like the last few months, the Cycle Frontier, that was like a big extraction shooter, shut down. Dreadnought, the space game.
Really?
Super People, Super People 2. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodhunt, not technically shut down, but isn't being developed anymore.
That sounds pretty dead,
So yeah, I guess like when you know, publishers say, you know, the risks of getting involved in the free-to-play market, I guess they're specifically talking of the risk of not enough people playing it or putting money into it, and it shuts down, like, sometimes in less than a year.
So is that... Yeah, those all felt quite recent.
Yeah, I mean, the Cycle Frontier came out, I think, last year? Second half of last
Definitely,
year?
Definitely, yeah.
Super People 2, I think, never got out of early access. I can't remember how long it's been around for, but...
So what happened with Frontier? The Cycle Frontier?
I don't know. I think just not enough people were playing it. Which is... But by, like, most accounts, it was actually quite good. Ollie Tom's our guy's editor, you know, he loved it.
It was like Battleborn that got strangled at birth by Overwatch was by all accounts actually all right, but yeah, sometimes just things don't have a chance, do they?
Yeah, I guess you could argue Battleborn is maybe like a bit too close to, you know, another existing mega game.
Yeah,
the Cycle Frontier did. It's an extraction shooter, so ultimately it's a bit, you know, it was a bit like Escape from Tarkov. Or whatever, but it also like looks and feels and in many ways operates in a, you know, much more unique way. So
forgive my yokelism here, an extraction shooter's a get to the chopper job, right?
Basically, yeah, like you get it's kind of like that crossed with Battle Royale.
Do you have like the closing ring?
No, there's not a ring, but there's a similar thing where you kind of like, if you die you lose all your stuff, you only get one life, etc.
Okay.
I can't handle them. They're a bit too stressful for me, and I hate the idea of like permanently losing my stuff.
Yeah, Tarkov had a friend who played that a lot, and it just, I mean, I played PUBG and thought that was just a really like psychologically bleak experience. And apparently, that was even more. So.
Oh yeah, I played a bit of Tarkov. It's grim in it, pretty much every way. But yeah, so I guess we'll just have to see about this Project Kestrel Nae Vanguard thing.
Are there any other big free-to-plays that you know of in the works?
In the works? That's a good question, actually.
And also, do we know anything more about like Vanguard Kestrel? Like, other than, it, like, do we know sort of, like, what is our genre, territory it's in?
Just it's a co-op... well, if Kestrel is like much like Vanguard except not free to play, it will be a co-op shooter. But we don't know if it's going to be like PvP or purely like co-op PvE. It is not the multiplayer control game. I think.
Okay.
That Remedy are also making. Which I'm also kind of like interested in, but also not interested in at the same time because I really like Control, and I love like the world of Control, but putting like all the like intentional strangeness that you get with a multiplayer game into that,
yeah,
like, kind of like cheapen it a bit. So I'm not sure. We'll see about that.
No,
as
I'm with you on that.
But yeah, the other interesting quote in all this is the core competences bit that the CEO said, which gives the impression that they were making a game that they knew they didn't have competence.
Well,
that like a too harsh a reading?
No, my translation of that is pretty simple. It's like basically if you've expanded. And then, like, either had to just, like, bite the egg on a few new projects or, you know, or step back altogether. You talk about your core competencies are sort of retreating to what you're best at. So it's kind of an admission of failure, yeah. Or at least, you know, that they're taking a more risk-averse position and just doing more surefire things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Due to associated risks, core competences,
these very specific things.
I mean, I like all of Remedy's like recent games. I think have been really good. So, I'm not like too worried, even if they don't have, I think, any. Oh no, they do have multiplayer experience because they made that. They made that shooter that was like a multiplayer spin-off of what was it? It was like Crossfire or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this?
Yeah, it rings a bell.
So there's this game called Crossfire X, which is the third game in the Crossfire series, which is apparently a very popular shooter series in China and South Korea. And Remedy made two single-player campaigns for it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the original developers made the multiplayer. And it was, not warmly received. So I'm incorrect. Remedy apparently still don't have much multiplayer experience.
No, it's not a core competency, no.
No, it's not. Well, good thing they're rebooting it then.
There you go. Happy days.
Happy days, unless you're, I don't know, really looking forward to a free-to-play Remedy game, maybe.
This is it. Well, it was the dream, wasn't it? Was it the dream for anyone?
No one I know personally.
Well, if you're out there, I'm sorry for being flippant about your dream.
Right, should we talk about what we've been playing?
Yes, let's.
This week, Nate. So you've been back on the old AOE.
Yeah, so this time we're back with the Armenians, the Georgians... and the reworked Persians. So it's quite clever. What they do every time they do a DLC, they'll take one of the like the nations that was like abstracting way too many actual real historical countries and break it up into sub-factions. So, for example, they split like India up into three like historical medieval Indian kingdoms. And so they've done this with... you know, the I suppose Asia Minor region, you'd call it, sort of the eastern part of Persia. East and West. Do get them confused sometimes. You don't build lumber carts anymore. Lumber camps even. You build donkey carts or mule carts even, which are great. Oh, nice. The Persians...
Does donkeys make cute donkey noises?
They kind of honk,
Nice.
The llamas that they introduced when they did the Incans back in 2000 had a comically frequent and loud sound effect. So if you get a map with llamas on, they're just doing this sort of eerie yell all the time. But the donkeys, I think, have toned it down a bit, which is good.
Okay.
It's nice to see. What I do really like with what they're doing... They're doing some genuinely, like, quite rigorous like entry level historical stuff as well, because like those nations at that time, so we're talking sort of, you know, when you've got the Ottomans, the Byzantine Empire scrapping over the region a lot, like it's not something I really knew very much about, or I just knew corners of it from other places. And like, it's silly, I know, but the number of like genuinely solid understandings of bits of history I have because I have sat through the briefings of Age of Empires 2 campaigns is not to be sniffed at. So yeah, if you want to get murky in Turkey, then
you're on a roll today, mate. These are good puns.
Or if you want to head east to the Indus Valley and ransack a Dansack, that's all I've got. I'm done. What have you been playing?
So I've been playing Planet of Lana, which is a 2.5D puzzle platformer that came out earlier this year.
Did you say Planet of Lager?
Lana.
Okay. Very different game.
So I'm playing Planet of Lager, yeah?
Welcome to Planet of Lager. Now, buy that fucking bin.
2.5D Boozer Simulator. lads.
Hang on, isn't that just Landlord Super? Like, with maximum respect to Landlord Super.
Does Landlord Super have accents?
I don't know. I haven't seen that since like the first footage from years ago, but I was intrigued.
Yeah. Hmm. So anyway, Planet of Lana. It's one I kind of had to be talked into trying by a friend, because I played other cinematic side-scrolling platformers like Limbo or Inside.
Oh, so it's that sort of thing.
Yeah. And while I can appreciate the artistry in these games, but I've never really loved playing them. I tend to get a bit bogged down almost in a lot of the puzzles.
Oh, so, yeah, I hate platforming puzzles. I'm always just like, well, screw you. I will not put another 4 minutes into this to walk around the room again.
Oh, it's not like that different, to be honest, but I did blast through it in a couple of evenings and really, really enjoyed it. Because it's not fast-paced by any means, but it did feel a lot more... Well, I felt a lot more active and engaged in the puzzle solving, I think, because you don't just control your own character. So very early on, you make friends with this adorable little cat monkey creature.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of like basically just a little black blob with four legs and a little curly tail. It's called Mui, which is absolutely going to be the name of a future pet in my household.
We've decided our next cat's going to be called Gollum.
Based on Game of the Year, The Lord of the Rings Gollum.
This is it, yeah. Mm. In honour of. Mui is great, though.
Well, much like Gollum, Mui is surprisingly agile. So you can direct him to like jump up to ledges to grab ropes or push buttons. You tell him to hide in certain spots. You can, like, certain holes you can dig through. He, she, or it, I should say. And it just, like, doing that whilst also managing your own movement, it becomes this really fun, like, single-player co-op game.
Interesting.
And that's just a lot more satisfying to me than having to do all the... What I normally get in these kinds of games, which is, like, very menial box-pushing, very slow climbing around puzzle-solving stuff. So, yeah, I wasn't sure about it, but I really liked it in the end. It's also just a nicer place to be than the worlds of Limbo or Inside. It has this very colourful, vibrant, apparently like Studio Ghibli inspired look to it. And some of the levels, like especially in the background, are just absolutely gorgeous. And I was playing on a 7-inch Steam Deck, so I imagine it looks even better on your big 27-inch gaming monitor.
There was a lovely little game called Stella that came out. Not Stella like Star, like Stila. Like the big Ethiopian monuments. That came out a few years ago. I reviewed it.
I remember you talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have played anything like that by instinct. You know, it doesn't attract me. But I had a very similar experience to the one you're describing with this, actually. Pacing was really important. Because, like I say, if I get too impatient with a puzzle, I will never come back. But the set pieces in it were really fun as well. I also just I think I said this a couple of months ago, but as time goes by, I've got ever more of an appetite for, yeah, just a game that will take a couple of nights and then I don't have to think about it again. You know, again, just talking about the you know, games as a service. Yeah, it's kind of so refreshing now just to have something entirely sitting-sized.
Yeah. I read a few reviews of Planet of Lana after I finished it, and a lot of them kind of criticized the length. Like, they said it was too short. I thought it was, like, just right. It's about, I don't know, maybe, like, 4 hours-ish. And it doesn't, it never ever really repeats itself. It doesn't stay in, like, one area or biome for too long. Like, even the puzzles feel... There's never, like, you do two of the same kind of puzzle in a row.
Yeah.
Right? There's not, like... It's not like there's one very easy one where you're taught to push a box onto a pressure plate, and then it's like, now you get 1 hour of pressure plate box siding puzzles of increasing difficulty. No, it's mixed up very well, and it does introduce like new mechanics and systems, but it does so in like a well-paced where it's not like too slow or too overwhelming.
And what's the sort of what's the aesthetic to it?
It's kind of like soft edge, a bit like painterly.
Mm-hmm. Is
it's like soft. It's, well, I don't know about soft sci-fi, but it is. So the setting is like some kind of Earth-like, but probably alien world.
Is it indeed the planet of Lana?
It's a planet, and it's got Lana on it. At one point, Lana might be the only person on the planet, so you could say, like, if that's the case, then yes, planet of Lana.
Brutal.
But no, it's not like it's not really like post-apocalyptic. It's more of a, you know, beauty of nature kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the best beast in it?
I mean, Mui's technically a beast. I'm a big Mui fan. But there's also, this like weird tentacle thing, which isn't hostile at all. It just lies around sleeping. But you unlock a way to basically like get it to shove itself out of the way so you can, you know, turn it into a platform or get it to unblock an opening or something.
Oh, so is it something that doesn't... It seems like it's just a background asset until you find something to do with it. That's quite fun.
Yeah, and it's just nice because it shares the same, like, all-black color palette with monsters that are trying to kill you. So it's kind of nice to just bump into this one dude. And he's just, you know...
He's okay. Sleeping.
He's just chilling. Yeah, he's all right. I like him. I'd like to... I could share a planet of lager with him.
On the planet of lager.
Yeah. Right. Should we do maybe a bit of hardware?
I think a bit of hardware would be very good, yes.
A good way, good day to wear hardware.
I'd say it's fine day, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So, back in season 2, episode 35, I believe, we discussed a regulatory filing. Very exciting.
Oh my god, previously on.
For a mysterious new Steam Deck model.
Mm.
And we all predicted what about it would be different. So I said new screen, Alice said detachable controllers, and Nate, you suggested it would be controlled by an ill but not terminally ill monkey.
Oh, so with I did.
with a Neuralink chip in its brain that may or may not develop Munchausen syndrome.
Yes.
We now have our answer, and apologies to shareholders in Neuralink and monkey hospitals, but it is not what Nate said.
Thank God.
It is in fact what I said, because it is the new Steam Deck is the Steam Deck OLED, which adds obviously a new OLED touchscreen, as well as longer battery life, a more efficient processor, redesigned thumbsticks, a new 1 TB storage option, and several other small tweaks besides. I have been testing it for about a week, and I think it's brilliant. It is very much the Steam Deck, but better. So the display is more colourful, has HDR support now. It lasts longer, which is a big thing. Potentially by like several hours, depending on the game.
What's the O in OLED stand for? I just need to ask this. I've never known.
Organic light emitting diode.
Organic? Are they made of meat?
No, I don't. I don't understand what the deal is. I mean, would you like a brief crash course in panel technologies, Nate?
Yeah, I think I would.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, so with most like LCD screens, like the one you may be looking at right now, the pixels are lit by a separate backlight, which works fine. But Well, not really. It's kind of like done. It's normally done in like zones.
Okay. Yeah.
With OLED, each pixel kind of like is an LED, so that kind of gives you both more, I guess, controllable lighting. It also lets you have like completely perfect black shades because it's not like an illuminated. Because it's not an illuminated LED like trying to approximate a black color. It is, or shade, I should say. It is like literally just off. Like there is no light emitting from it at all, and that in turn lets you have like really good contrast.
Wow, that must look quite like fundamentally different, does it?
Yeah, I think so. Especially on if you compare like an OLED TV to these are like relatively old fashioned now, but like an LCD TV. Like the colors and the contrast on an OLED screen are just like much more. They just have a lot more pop to them.
Oh, well, today was, once again, a cowboy school day.
Yeah. I was talking about battery life, but the other thing about OLED is it's more power efficient because you can have pixels which are just off at times. So don't use any power at all. That's all good stuff.
Wouldn't playing static just monster your power bill then? Because every LED would just be turning on and off at random all the time.
Not to my knowledge, I don't think. No.
That's really interesting. To be honest, I feel like a right chumpus now, because that's how I thought monitors worked.
Oh, as in like the individual pixels like turn off?
Yeah, I thought it was like a big carpet of little lights. So.
I mean, that's what OLED is.
What fun!
Yeah. Well, you're right. You're right now, in a way.
And that's all that matters.
Because we are now like getting OLED monitors. Like they're a fairly recent thing.
Are they very expensive?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the downside. But the Steam Deck OLED is actually like very good value, because this is the other thing. The new models, like the Steam Deck OLED models, are basically the same price as the old Steam Decks. It's just the old Steam Decks have had a price cut. Otherwise, you're basically getting like more hardware for the same price.
How long into their life did that price cut happen?
So the original Steam Deck only launched in like February 2022.
Okay, so yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
A little over a year and a half. I will say I understand completely if someone has bought like an old Steam Deck, like original Steam Deck, and they're now seething at the fact that there's a significantly better version in every way for the same money, less than 2 years into its lifespan. I guess that's just a risk you take when you buy, you know, electronics of any kind.
Well, it's like I'm always prepared for the fact that by the time I get rid of a phone, it will feel completely different from whatever's new.
Yeah.
You need to try and avoid buying machines where you can. Well, no, actually, that's literally the opposite to your jobs.
I love this thing, to be honest. Like, I'd recommend this in a second. Probably over like more powerful handhelds, like the Asus ROG Ally.
I suppose it's a tricky one to shoehorn a metaphor into, but do you sort of feel like the way a cowboy knows the weight of a good revolver in their hand immediately?
Yeah. It has a Oh, it's like it's got... It's like this. The Steam Deck has a soul, almost, and the ROG Ally is just, like, a piece of machinery.
Do you feel that this was the product the Steam Deck was waiting to be?
That's literally, like, how Valve are, marketing it or positioning it in the interviews. Like, this is the one we would have had if we had, you know, a few months more time.
I think that's the... You know, in terms of handling a launch in a very rapidly developing field, I think they pulled it off really well. I may even get one myself. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, because you know what, actually? I was thinking, I want to spend less time sitting at my desk.
Yeah.
And, like, I write more productively when I'm not at my desk anyway, because I have a little laptop. And I thought the only other thing I actually do with my PC... is play the video games. So, like, in a controversial move for an XRPS staffer, might actually just get rid of the PC and replace it with a little Steam Man.
Okay.
What do you think of that? Let's workshop it right now.
Okay, so I guess the main thing is I have not tried an Age of Empires game on the Steam Deck, so I don't know how that's going to work out.
Hmm.
But yeah, like if you don't care about playing stuff at super high frame rates or super high resolutions.
Well, yeah, a lot of things I'd want to play are sort of quite ploddy things. Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I was just thinking earlier today, I wouldn't mind freeing myself of the... Well, no, you can't get rid of a computer. That's mad. I hereby repent. Never mind, it was an exciting flight of fancy while it lasted.
No, you said to me a while back, didn't you? You were thinking of getting a new one.
Yeah, I was thinking around the turn of the year. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Wow. Decision time. Steam Deck or new PC.
Well, wow. What do you think? What's your vote?
It partly depends like what your PC is made up of now, and how like future. Not maybe not future proof, but future resilient.
It is a bit of a clown card, to be honest. But then, it's fine, I suppose. Oh, I've just realised you can't record a podcast on a Steam Deck, can you?
I don't know. You might be able to with like a USB hub, and if you go into desktop mode, it is based on Linux. But I'm sure there's like recording software.
There'd be dragons. Still, worth thinking about.
Yeah. Oh, that might be like a high concept thing we can do, like where at least on my end I could record part of the Electronic Wireless Show on a Steam Deck.
Yeah, if you can do it, I'll be impressed. That'd be great.
Yeah, I might just look into that. That might be fun. That might be fun.
There you go, that's your scrap heap challenge.
So I fear we might have to delay your role-playing Tower of Jocularity again this week, Nate, as we are still down one party member.
Oh, don't fear. Let's just build up the anticipation even further. It's going to be an adventure like no other.
We have picked our classes, though. We have picked our classes. So I will be, just to give a little teaser, I will be playing as Dracula stood on top of a turtle ship.
Multiclassing, very good.
As we know, vampires famously enjoy being around running water. And I believe Alice is going to be Stirling Castle.
Yes, that's right.
In all its aged magnificence.
Got to watch out for boulders.
So yeah, that'll be a good one the next time we're all in a podcast together in maybe 2024.
The day will come, I believe. We'll make it to episode 40.
Okay, instead we shall simply move on to our recommendations. Every week we recommend something which is not a video game. Nate, do you have a recommendation for us?
Yeah, this is, it's a restaurant, but it's quite a practical recommendation. If you are passing through Birmingham at any point and want lunch, the Asia Food Court is astonishingly good value and just really, really, like, weirdly good food across the board. There's about 9 small restaurants operating out of a a two-story courtyard and you load cash onto a card and go to places and order things and you get little bleeperinos that let you know when your din-dins has been summoned. And I got a bento box that was about the size of a wagon, like just an unfeasible amount of salmon, all very fresh, lovely, lovely tempura of veg, a nice Thai salad as well. Strong showing from a lot of national cuisines and right in the middle of town as well. So the Asia food court, good in a pinch.
That does. So I love a food market.
Can you eat it?
I love a food market. Yeah, there's like quite a few in London. It's kind of like mine and my friends go to like birthday thing. Just go somewhere. We can rock up like 5 p.m. and by 10 p.m. you've had like four different meals from different parts of the world.
It's good. It's so good times.
So good. My recommendation this week is a couple of years old now, but I recently watched a Netflix documentary called Mission Joy, Finding Happiness in Troubled Times. It's structured around this joint interview with Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama.
It turns out,
I didn't know this, while Desmond Tutu was alive, these two were like really close friends.
Really?
Yeah. And it's all about finding the emotive and scientific benefits of joy and happiness and of endeavoring to find happiness when life gets hard. Which sounds like a bit floofy, but it's all just such a nice thing to watch, partly because it is very like earnestly optimistic.
Yeah.
And partly because every few minutes you get a scene of Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama just laughing at each other or bantering each other or something like that. So it just feels very warm and genuine, as if like you are just in the presence of two very, very good friends.
I have got no problem with that at all. That sounds really good.
Yeah, and it's not a religious lecture at all. It's actually very secular in its approach and its tone. So I, as a non-religious person, felt like I got as much out of it as someone who is a Christian or a Buddhist might have done.
Nice. So it's I didn't know those guys knew each other. Really interesting.
Yeah. They have very, very good rapport. Very good rapport between Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the 14th Dalai Lama.
The Bish.
Right. So I believe that is the end of another, was it, season 2, episode 38 of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast. You can find us on rockpapershotgun.com, and we are also on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and now Blue Sky as well. If you just search Rock, Paper, Shotgun on those. We also have a Discord where you can chat with fellow listeners of the show and fellow RPS readers about anything you fancy, really. The site, games, the podcast in general. We'll link to that in the notes as well. We should be back next week.
Yeah.
Although I am absolutely not making predictions about who will be back next week, because I did that last time and it fucked us.
It'll be three Alice Bells next week somewhere.
So, instead, I will simply say, hope to see you then. And for now, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Nate.
Farewell, I love you all.
Bye.